Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And tonight I'm talking a little bit about the Spanish Civil War and about the complexities of the violence in the Spanish Civil War and the run-up to the conflict. I'm looking at The Spanish Holocaust by Paul Preston, which is an extraordinary book, in which he places the blame for the huge loss of life during the Civil War and afterwards almost exclusively at the foot of Spain's generals and the political right. But it would be disingenuous to see it exclusively in those terms. There was revolutionary violence as well. And in the interest of, I suppose, balance, but balance isn't really the right word, because it's not really the purpose here to be kind of both siding about fascism. But in the interest of presenting a kind of wider contextual picture, I really want to talk about the revolutionary violence. So in chapter 8 of the book, Revolutionary Terror in Madrid, Paul Preston writes, "The military uprising, ostensibly against a non-existent communist takeover plot, provoked the collapse of the structures of law and order. To make matters worse, in an effort to convince the great powers to support the Republic, the cabinet formed on the 19th of July was made up exclusively of middle-class liberals, and thus neither respected nor initially obeyed by the left-wing parties and unions that defeated the uprising." So the uprising across Spain fails initially in its goals, and particularly the part of the uprising in Madrid failed, and that means that Madrid very quickly becomes besieged by the fascist generals who have flown over from North Africa by Hitler's Condor Legion. And had Madrid fallen quickly, that would have been the end of the Spanish Republic. It takes a further 3 years of fighting to defeat the Republic, and the intervention of the Republican Army and also of the First International Brigades managed to prevent Madrid from falling. But it was a combined working class trade union and leftist parties, particularly the anarchist movement, effort that prevents the fascist conquest of Madrid, and also of Barcelona.
Paul Preston continues. An outburst of revolutionary fervour and an orgy of killing would demonstrate once more that Spain's harshly repressive society had produced a brutalised underclass. The key events that underlay the violence in Republican Madrid took place in the first 2 days. The opening of the prisons saw hundreds of common criminals released, among them sadists and psychopaths who were only too willing to use the political chaos as a shield for their activities. Moreover, they had ample motives to seek revenge against the magistrates and judges who'd put them in jail. In fact, out of fear of reprisals or because of their sympathy with the coup, many judicial functionaries went into hiding. More than 100 judges were murdered. A central factor in the violence was the distribution of arms in the wake of the defeat of the military uprising. On the evening of the 19th of July, the general in charge of the coup in the capital, Joaquín Fanjul, took command of the troops, and the Falangist volunteers gathered in the Montana barracks near the Plaza de España. He was unable to lead them out because the building was surrounded by a huge crowd of civilians, together with about 100 civil guards and a few assault guards. Fanjul's men opened fire with machine guns. Those with rifles replied. Early the following morning, an even larger crowd converged on the barracks, accompanied now by two artillery pieces, albeit with a few shells. Cannon fire and a bomb dropped by a loyalist aircraft saw a white flag extended through the window. The flag may have been waved by one of the many pro-Republican soldiers among Fanjul's forces, but the crowd advanced in expectation of immediate surrender. And it's interesting how the whole scene has the kind of the sort of the storming of the Bastille sense about it, that there is this populist anger towards not just an ancien regime, but an insurgent attempt to overthrow a popular democracy. Many were killed or wounded when they met with a burst of machine gun fire, writes Paul Preston. The outraged throng pulled back, but when a second white flag appeared, swarmed forward only to be greeted once more by the rattle of machine guns. Finally, just before noon, the now infuriated mob broke in. Weapons were distributed and a massacre ensued at the hands of the pro-Republican conscripts from within and the militiamen from outside. A giant left winger hurled officers from windows. Some officers committed suicide, and the Falangists who had joined the rebels inside were shot. So here we have the culmination of a long, long period of violent, brutal repression on the part of the right. It is really the kind of the outcome of a long period of class warfare. One of the points that the Spanish Holocaust makes is that throughout the 1920s and 30s, the landowning class, the Catholic Church, and the elites within the army had waged a kind of a war of attrition against the Spanish peasantry, seeing them as barely human in some regards, and had seen the prospects of organisation amongst the Spanish peasants and the demand for better working conditions as something akin to treason. a strange anti-Semitism ran through the rhetoric of the landowners, being as, you know, Jews had been expelled from Spain in the 15th century. There were virtually no Jews in early 20th century Spain, and yet the association between this kind of, again, this fascist association between communism and the Jews, and the idea that the Spanish peasants were somehow kind of not fully kind of Europeanly Spanish. They were viewed in as being sort of a kind of a darker skinned and therefore sort of less Aryan version of Spanish masculinity or femininity. That there was a kind of something almost alien about the peasantry, and there was this in lots and lots of kind of fascist Catholic writing at the time. There's this kind of rather ludicrous idea that somehow the Jews are somehow behind it all. This kind of culture that existed that positioned the peasants as either kind of, or the Spanish working class as kind of expendable, as something to be used purely for its labour, and then forced to conform and obey otherwise. It's that kind of culture that enables army officers to gun down or ordinary Spanish people in cold blood during the siege, the kind of the siege experience required, and the Falange Party, which emerged out of Gil Robles' Sida Party, Gil Robles, really the kind of the Spanish answer to Nazism. This party was inevitably going to side with the junta. And the attempts to overthrow the republic, and so a meet with kind of no mercy when it comes to the final reckoning when the prison has been stormed. On that brilliantly sunny day, sunny Monday morning, on the 20th of July, an English nurse, Mary Bingham de Urquidy, saw defeated soldiers being shot while a baying crowd howled abuse. She counterpointed her gruesome tale with evidence of the humanity of some Republicans. She saw a 10-year-old boy beg for the life of his father, who was about to be shot. His plea that he and his father were Republicans was successful. The mob was moved on by Republican soldiers, and numerous corpses could be seen. Mary Bingham seemed unaware that many of the bodies were Republican civilians killed while attacking the barracks. In contrast with the firmly pro-rebel ambassador of Chile, Aurelio Nunez Morgado, described the events of La Montana as the start of the Madrid massacre. Certainly, many of the weapons distributed when the barracks was taken would be used over the next 5 months in the repression. In the course of the 19th of July, some churches were burned, often because rebel soldiers had been storing arms there and now had fired from the towers on groups of workers. Other churches were left intact because their parish priest had opened them and invited in the militiamen to see that there were no fascists inside. The art treasures therein were thus saved. In the first few days, what was called popular justice was meted out spontaneously and indiscriminately against anyone denounced as a rightist. However, in Madrid, as happened in Barcelona and Valencia, virtually every left-wing political party and trade union soon established its own squads, the Checas, to eliminate suspected fascists. A headquarters set up in requisition buildings. They often had private prisons where detainees were interrogated. Executions usually took place in the outskirts of the city. In Madrid, there were nearly 200 of these squads, if those set up by recent freed common criminals were included. The principal checkers, run by left-wing parties and unions, numbered about 25. Considered to be warriors in the social war, criminals were often accepted into anarchist rearguard militias. Although far from having a monopoly on the worst excesses, the anarchists were the most prominent in the bloodshed in Madrid. Their checkers often took the names given respectively to CNT and PCE, neighbourhood headquarters and cells, the anarchists using Libertarian Orthenium, and the communists using the name Radio. So this is complex, this is problematic, this is a picture of the Spanish Civil War that very, very often doesn't quite emerge, and it shows that during a period of revolutionary violence, during a period of civil war, on both sides, there is no room for compromise and no room for mercy. The story there of the boy pleading for his father's life and the mercy being shown, that's an outlier. That sort of thing rarely happened during this period. And because you have two contrasting visions of Spain, one a hierarchical, traditional, authoritarian and autocratic Spain run by army officers, Catholic priests and landowners, and the other a Spain which is a kind of a mixture of social democracy and revolutionary politics. The two are wholly incompatible with one another, and only a fight to the finish will determine what Spain will be. Both sides view the other as an existential threat, and both sides view the other as something to annihilate. And in both cases, they're right. They are an existential threat to one another. And civil wars produce these sorts of conditions. One significant factor as well is that during this period of revolutionary uprising, the standard forces of law and order can't do an awful lot. You have a republic that is assailed by a fascist insurrection, and the forces of law and order, the police, the militia, are simply overwhelmed by the anarchist militias that are unleashed as a result of this chaos, that are armed as a result of this chaos. The ability, writes Paul Preston, of the forces of order to control the checkers was severely circumscribed. Many policemen, assault guards and civil guards supported the military rebellion and had either crossed the lines or else been arrested. Many others were often suspect, and the assault guards and civil guards who remained loyal had to be deployed at the front. The consequent decimation of various police forces facilitated the activities of the rearguard militia groups. Nevertheless, the government began almost at once to take faltering steps to put a stop to the theft, extortion, and murder being committed by some checkers, although it would be 5 months before anything like full control was established. The new Minister of the Interior, General Sebastián Posés Perea, had been Inspector General of the Civil Guard until the 19th of July. He had worked frantically, albeit in vain, to limit the spread of the rebellion and within the corps. Now he worked equally hard and unsuccessfully to stop the checkers carrying out arrests and house searches. The Civil Guard and the Assault Guard had been in the prior decade, from the mid-20s to the mid-30s, some of the most egregious and wanton perpetrators of the crimes of Spain's landlords, and had been quite overtly used as a sort of somewhere between the kind of the Pinkerton detectives in America and the brown shirts in Germany, a real kind of blunt instrument of class rule, perpetrating horrendous violence, particularly in rural Spain. So it's hardly surprising that when Franco and the other generals cross from North Africa into southern Spain, that this is a very exciting moment for fascist-leaning police officers and civil guards. So it placed the Republic under a huge pressure, and the idea across sort of much of Spain that the Republic was showing its true colours by supposedly allowing these lawless bands on the streets in order to carry out lynch mob vigilante justice. This is a kind of a very toxic and wholly untrue interpretation of the wishes of the Republic. But it did Republican Spain an immense amount of damage. Paul Preston writes, "The targets of the self-appointed checkers and militia groups were not only the active supporters of the military coup. Many totally innocent individuals were arrested and sometimes murdered, as one middle-class detainee wrote later, simply for owning a business or having opposed a strike. For having expressed support for the suppression of the Asturian Rising, for belonging to the clergy, or for being rude to a maid's boyfriend, or to the lout of a doorman. Concierges would often tip off the checker on the basis of the arrival of an unknown visitor, or an unusual package, or because an occupant of the building never left home. Suspicion was enough. Antonio Machado, a fervent pro-Republican poet, was arrested in the early days of the war in a cafe at in the Glorieta de Cambéry because a militiaman mistook him for a priest." So this is really the kind of the everyday stuff of the kind of breakdown of the functioning of a state and the inability of said state to deal with militias. Now, the militias are notionally there in defence of the Republic, but when you get down to a grassroots level, many of the anarchists who were patrolling the streets with rifles didn't even like the Republic, didn't care for it at all. So it was kind of like a bourgeois Republic, which it is, and saw it as being anti-working class. One of the great tragedies of the left in the 20th century is, and one of the great sort of explanations for the...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Almost always stoppable rise of fascism is that fascism's opponents spend an awful lot of time persecuting, kidnapping and shooting one another. And of course, if you look at the example of the Weimar government, there is an example of a bourgeois government equally capable of eradicating and shooting leftist militias. So across Europe in the 1920s and 30s, the shoe has been on both feet, shall we say. Okay, so we're going to finish there in just a moment, but I do intend to look a bit more at Spain. I've got Giles Tremlett's new history of the International Brigades to dive into, so we'll carry on with that, with this in a little while. But anyway, I hope you find this interesting and useful, and I will catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks very much, folks. All the best. Bye bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.